Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben. And in this episode, we'll be throwing around some new ideas for how the book we're writing might look and sound, and then dive into some thoughts about success that we think are worth exploring. How about that?
How about it? How about we made it through that intro, which I did not think we were going to make it
Only
through.
Only 35 takes.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's fine. If I kept my mouth shut, nobody would have known that we were not absolutely perfect every single time.
Right.
Yes, we had a great conversation last week about the book, and we have finally put something sort of regular on our calendar to have a discussion, which I think will help.
Which were two for two. It's inspired some good ideas, some good thoughts, some good research.
Right. 100% of the time, it has been a good thing.
Right. So, yeah, shall we dive in?
Let's do it. Let's dive into what we talked about and what we're thinking. And
so we have, we're in this beautiful place right now of thinking about the structure of the book and how it's going to flow. And is it going to have sections? Is it going to have chapters? What's each of those going to look like? So one thing that we talked about was exactly that, like how this thing is structured from like a chapter slash section sort of, I don't know, is it categorized? How do each of those things flow? How do they start? How do they end? What's in the middle?
and once you know all of that, you've written a book.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But to that point, you know, for us to have an idea for how that might look will help us write, or, you know, at least help us, you know, gather information that's going to make it into the book, maybe help us filter out some stuff that doesn't. And really, I think kind of helps inform the rest of the stuff that we're going to talk about today and will help us. It'll certainly be helpful for us writing the book. So one thing that we talked about was, I think both of us referenced some books that we're reading now or have read recently and how things that we like about that, maybe ways that we could incorporate some of those ideas into our book. Gosh, it's weird to say our book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially because it doesn't exist yet. But
it seems like not so long ago that it was weird to say our podcast too.
Yeah,
so
right.
Here we are.
Yeah. And here we are. Feels so natural. and so one thing that we talked about was using stories to either kick off chapters or sections, or using them to maybe summarize and like drive home a point about everything that we just talked about. And at least the way I'm feeling right now is, I don't think there's a wrong answer there, but storytelling, like some of the other things that we're going to talk about today, are pretty crucial when it comes to memory, evoking emotions, and all these other things, right? So so that will happen some way, shape, or form. Just how and at what cadence and where exactly maybe is a little bit to be determined yet.
Yeah. Something, just as we started talking, as you started talking, and thinking about this idea that of how it looks, right? It made me wonder, if you don't write a book with a graphic designer, do you start by thinking about how it looks, right? Or do you just write and then what happens, happens?
Yeah.
And you maybe insert that what it looks like thing at the end.
Yeah.
But I think I would do you a great disjustice if I did not consider that now.
Yeah. Yeah. And my immediate like gut reaction to that is that it likely is healthier or will come up with a better book with better content if we just write and not get stuck on how it looks. And nature of the beast and writing a book with a graphic designer that we're going to think about how it looks the whole time. Cause I can't help myself, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely don't want there to be, I don't want the look and feel and, all of that to get in the way of it just being a good book. You know what I'm saying? So like, I think if at the end of the day, what we can do is we can take all of the stuff that's put into this book. And if that would just be delivered in black and white text with no visual elements to mm-hmm. it. Like, it's got to make sense. It's got to be helpful. It's got to be, you know, backed with real information and not just our opinions, but also our opinions and experience are a big part of that.
Right.
I think that it should be able to be read like that and be good and helpful.
Yes.
If we were to like flip that and say, hey, it's just going to be like this picture book or be, you know, full, like so full of visuals. Like I feel like it almost, it wouldn't be a book then, you know, it would be something else. I don't know what, but.
A coffee table book.
Yeah. Maybe a coffee table
maybe
book.
Maybe we yeah. should, I think that we should consider making a coffee table book.
That can
book.
Be our sequel.
What?
That can be our sequel.
Yeah. 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 This one's all words. That one's no words.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm getting from you is not only do I have to at some point write words, they have to make sense. And I don't know if I can work under these conditions. I feel very penned in by all of your requirements over there, you know.
Oh, these are the rules, Sue.
Yeah. Dang it. Yeah. No, it, I can't, even though I'm not a designer, I can't imagine not thinking about what we can do to make it look beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and maybe too, that is that the trainer in me too, that is thinking like, how do you make it so that people are digesting this so yeah. that you're not just putting information out,
right.
but you're making it, you're making an experience for people.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that I could not have a better co-author than you from the design side to make it a good experience.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
That was a compliment.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Your face is not saying that, but that's okay.
It's because I'm doing the thing where I'm thinking as you're talking and not actually listening to everything that you're saying. So I'm...
Okay.
Don't thank me for that.
Fair enough. No, there are no thanks for that.
But yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I hope an outcome of this whole process is kind of like the, not that we're like polar opposites or anything like that, but there's a contrast in our skill set and mm-hmm. our day to day and certainly the way our brain thinks and everything. So I think that's maybe a nice, like really cool byproduct that we'll get by co-authoring this instead of, mm-hmm. you know, each of us writing our own thing or something, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. We've never, because we have to work sometimes, we have never really, you know, you mentioned us being polar opposites. I do think it's interesting. Big side road, here we go. How we can be polar opposites in terms of skills, in terms of physical characteristics, you know, tall, short, male, female, you know,
sure.
all yeah. of that stuff, skill sets, everything. And yet there is so much that, and we will, spoilers for just a little later in this conversation, there is so much that you can say to me. We can never have talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, oh, well, we believe this thing, yeah. right? Which is a thing we'll talk about something like that soon. And both go, yep.
Yeah.
That is just a thing we both believe.
Right.
So to be polar opposite and still be so aligned on some things
yeah.
with completely different life experience.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and really, I mean,
I have no period for the sense. I just yeah. think it's interesting. That's yeah. all.
Well, microcosm of the rest of our relationship, you know, both as, you know, business associates, teammates, and friends, but also like the rest of the world, you know, it's like the very cliche, like we have a hell of a lot more in common and we're a hell of a lot more aligned
right.
on things than we are the things that we're air quotes polar opposites on. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
It's just maybe the opposites are always easy to see, be emotional about, be
right.
political about, you know, whatever, all the things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. circling it back to this, you know, conversation about maybe the different aspects that we bring to this thing, and something that we're aligned on. What we talked about in our last, one thing that we talked about in our last meeting was just how maybe, I don't know if obvious is the word I want to use, but how obvious it would be that, yeah, we're two people that work at a marketing agency writing a book. Of course, it's going to be beautiful. You know, of course it's going to be visual.
Hope so, right?
Yeah. You know, but I do feel like we needed to say it, or, you know, we at least needed to acknowledge some of that stuff before we got too deep into writing and the structure and the content, because it may, like, we have to leave space for that. You know, if this were to just be something like, that was mostly or all research based or something, then it could be something that could be delivered in that black and white, like, who cares? Like, this just needs to be read and throw some charts in there so that people can see the data, you know?
Right.
And we'll have some of that, of all of that, plenty of writing, plenty of words, some charts and data. But we have to, it has to be more for us.
Right. Right.
And I think because of how we consume information and get information to resonate in our brains, which, spoiler alert, is pretty aligned with the rest of the world, all the more reason to have things like doodles and stories and pictures and stuff like that. And it, to just be generally creatively designed and beautiful looking.
Right.
So
you make a really important point. And I think one of the takeaways so far in this experience for me, and it's something that as I reflect on what we, just how we work together, not just you and I, but as our whole team, there is sometimes a moment where we all have to come together and go, do we care about this thing? And check the temperature of the room.
Yeah.
And if we can all get, again, it's that alignment word, if we can all get aligned on what we care about, or even the level, sometimes we have to calibrate the level of what, how intensely we care about it. And I think our experience usually is that my level is way up here, but that is just where I function as a human being. My level of care isn't even the right word. Like, my intensity of care is just high. It buzzes in my ears sometimes. And it doesn't mean you're not a caring person. You just are, again, that polar opposite. You are just a person who can say, yeah, I care about it, but not enough to fight.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I have a certain amount of bulldog in me. Like, I'm like, no, what is it? Do I care? Yep, I'll fight.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. But it is, I think it's good on a team to have those conversations.
For sure.
And yeah, just decide. Mix. And especially when that conversation comes down to finding out that somebody on the team cares more and thinking about how you reckon with that and still come to alignment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another side note. I am very side note-y today. So...
You're doing great. Let's move
along. Let's talk about pictures and doodles, right?
Let's do it.
So this is my nutty little idea. But you can almost always, for anybody who is a non-designer and wants to learn how to work with a designer, you can almost always convince a designer to do pictures and doodles.
Right?
In my experience.
Job security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, as I mentioned, maybe on the last episode of the podcast, on a certain podcast, sometime this year, totally inspired by the fact that I've been reading a lot of Kurt Vonnegut, and Kurt Vonnegut was a doodler.
Yeah.
And it had, at least for me, it has this effect of putting you in, like, bringing you into his mind and what he is feeling, or how he, as the author, summarizes the thing that he's just written.
Yeah.
And I like that. And even as a non-designer, I I'm a doodler, and I can see it working really well for us to do something like that.
Yeah.
So that is another thing that we have discussed, how we can incorporate not just images, because a lot of books, we could have really nice, clean, you know, quote unquote, perfect images.
Yeah.
Or we could create something that has a look and a feel and a brand
mm-hmm.
of ours.
Yeah.
And I think that is a good way to pursue.
Yeah.
And see how we feel about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think we're going to have all of that. We're going to have some doodles. We're going to have look and feel, brand, you know, mm-hmm. that's what you want to call it. And then, you know, there's just like the consumption of content and what we might do to help the audience understand stuff, remember stuff, you know, and
right.
I think in our conversation last, in our last meeting about the book, I talked about like me being a visual learner. So like, you know, if I were reading this book, I would want to make sure that there's plenty of content like that mm-hmm. in it. So, and in doing a bit of research ahead of this episode, I guess I got confirmation of something that I believe to be true. Cause as a designer, as someone that's put together, you know, print documents and online documents and websites and such, where there's a lot of information, I've had plenty of examples in my, experience where, adding visuals to the information that you're presenting is helpful for the audience, helpful for the mm-hmm. people that you're trying to get to understand a thing. So I think I already knew this on some level, but to see research and we'll share all this stuff either in show notes here or cited resources in the book from Harvard Learning, the U.S. Department of Education. I found a couple of really good resources that confirm this idea of things like notes and visuals and mm-hmm. doodles and charts and graphs and stories being like essential to people's retention and ability to consume information. The one report from the U.S. Department of Education talked about, you know, increased student interest, a saving of learning time and a higher development of higher order thinking skills,
mm-hmm.
said another way, like simplifying the hard stuff.
Right.
And then storytelling being a way to help things resonate or help people remember what you're talking about or the experience that you're sharing or whatever, right? So like lots of proof, lots of evidence, lots of research to confirm mm-hmm. this too. And I think maybe we could even be as bold as saying like everyone, every human is a visual learner on some level. The preference for learning that way might vary, right? Like, so when you label somebody a visual learner, that probably just means that that's their preference or that's the way that they mm-hmm. do best in learning or whatever. But the people on the other end of that spectrum who are not a, air quotes, visual learner, they're a visual learner. They just maybe don't need it as often, or they don't, you know, need to see the color. They just need to see the chart, you know, whatever.
Right.
Without getting into the weeds of examples. But so that was cool. And like it was both confirmation for me and like how I might be able to help contribute to the book best. I do want to write plenty and grow as a writer as well, but the visual stuff I think is what I'm most equipped to help contribute. So that was cool confirmation. And then also just kind of confirmation of what I do every day or have done, you know, for most of my career, which is telling, showing, explaining mm-hmm. through visuals, you know?
Yeah. It, you know, it's interesting when you, look into adult learning, which is this falls in that area.
Mm-hmm.
There is a misconception that adults they don't want all the hoo ha. They want like just tell me the thing, and you know, adults, some adults become really logical and pragmatic, and pretend that suddenly from the time they were in high school to now, their brains have so fundamentally changed that all they need is words on a page.
Mm.
And it's just not true. Our brains need, you need that space in order to properly process learning. So you need images. You need, even if you didn't need images, you need blank areas. Mm. And all of that helps adult learners the same way it helps kids.
Yeah.
You know, there is plenty of research in the sort of presentation space and how to put together a good PowerPoint and all of those things that say, don't just put words on a page.
Right.
People need images. They need space. They need breaks. They need all of that. Because otherwise our brains just don't process.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes like that. That is when you don't have those things that allow your brain to work through what it's looking at, that's when you find yourself reading the same sentence 100 times and getting frustrated with yourself because mm-hmm. you just can't take on learning that way in a cascade.
Yeah.
And it needs to ebb and flow, even for adults.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Sidebar, but related.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall your high school or any level of education that you've been through, maybe younger or older? Do you recall like hating, maybe that's too strong of a word, disliking a lecture?
I had one professor in college. I could not abide his lectures.
Yeah.
It was the tone of his voice.
Yeah.
It was everything about it put my brain to sleep.
Mm.
I couldn't learn from the man.
Yeah.
I tried so hard to.
Yeah.
He taught sociology. I wanted to learn sociology.
Yeah.
But his lectures, I couldn't do it because he droned.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So at least one example of it. And I think maybe the assumption is that generally younger people don't want the lecture, right? They need something more interactive or whatever.
Yeah. And by the way, that was my second time in college.
Okay, cool.
So I was still younger, but.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I wasn't a kid anymore.
Yeah. So I don't know what conclusion I'm trying to get here. And I'm also probably not doing any favors to ourselves with like this study of two, but I have a similar experience. Like I guess I don't have any like horror stories or specific examples of someone that I just could not learn from or anything. But I remember like generally having a feeling of like, don't just sit and talk to me. Even if you're pretty good at it, like I need the break. I need the mm-hmm. visual. I need, you know, something, a story in between, whatever. And I think I knew all that without knowing what I needed. I just knew I didn't like what was happening, which was somebody mm-hmm. talking to me the whole time. I think what I'm getting to is, I think there is a transition from like a young mind, a developing mind, where these things like visuals and stuff, you know, enhance learning and make learning better, more possible, et cetera, because of like what we're going through and what our brains are going through and all of that. And as you age, or maybe just after you've seen some things and you have some experience, like right now, if I knew that there was something like sociology that I was really interested in, and there was going to be somebody who was maybe a little monotone or whatever, mm-hmm. But they were just really good, you know, if I knew that they were qualified and whatever, I think I could go listen to an hour long lecture. I think I'd be okay with that. And I mm-hmm. think I could learn.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be better with all these other things? For sure. I think that I could say that right now really confidently too. But I do think that there's something that happens either through brain development or age or a development of patience or, you know, whatever, maybe all of these mm-hmm. things that means that like someone older, and that it's more than just age, experienced, whatever.
Yeah. Do you think it is that very magical, what's in it for me? Because if you want it, you will get it.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you're a kid, you're just being spoon-fed.
Right, yeah.
Right? You're being given, you're being told you have to.
You don't know what you want because you haven't seen enough yet. Yeah, all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's probably like way too many factors to get to this conclusion that I'm trying to get to on this sidebar. But I think, again, just all confirming what we've been talking about and what shape this thing might mm-hmm. take. Like, there's all kinds of different learners that are on all kinds of different levels. And so a challenge that we have is to make sure that what we're doing is presented in a way that speaks to as many as possible.
Right. You
know, while also like fulfilling our creative desires and the kind of mm-hmm. book that we should be writing. And
our need in this case to be a salesperson. We have to sell this. We don't get to just, this is not a client who is already paying us money yeah. and has to listen to, quote unquote, yeah. has to listen to us. Yeah. This is something that we, part of our obligation is to convince people that it's worth sticking around for.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
we have to use all of the tricks at our disposal.
Yeah, yeah.
To make that happen. And the good news is, as egotistical as it might sound, I think we're good salespeople.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe that's not, maybe the people that are listening are like, I don't know if that's yeah. the compliment you think it is.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah. It is if you think you're good at it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, pictures and doodles.
Yeah.
I can't wait to make a picture that goes into this book. I get a lot of crap on this team for the pictures I draw. And mm. I, like, the next time, as soon as this book comes out, I'm like, yeah, well, yeah. how many of yours are published?
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that we're giving you the opportunity for that validation.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit to something that you talked about in our last meeting, where you were kind of sharing your experience of writing and I don't know the why or how you got to this point, but you started to feel like, hey, got some momentum here, things are going good, this is coming together great, and then it flipped. And it went from good to crap.
It sure went from good to crap.
Maybe real quick, or I don't know, maybe refresh my memory of how the shift happened, or when you realized the shift happened. Had you it already written and then you were rereading it and you're like, wait, this started good, but then what the heck happened here? How'd that go down?
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, good question. It was happening. The worst part of it was I started with what felt like if everything felt good, and my writing process, if I can get a hook to get me started, that a hook will give me a lot of momentum. And that a whole big chunk before I put words on a page is like this mental game, my brain working things through. And ideally, I will sit down with at least a paragraph already sort of 80 to 90% formed in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have to visualize what it sort of looks like in my brain. Is I can see that paragraph, bold, black, it's there. And then I can see phrases that sort of trail behind it. So all I have to do is take that paragraph and connect everything else. And it's something.
Yeah.
Right? So working on, like I said before, toward the end of the book, because we're going backwards, I'm going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I had what I felt like really good momentum getting into that part of it, right? Where we're talking about purpose in your work. So individual tasks.
Yeah.
Purpose. I got, I don't know how many, a couple of pages of, you know, what probably amounts on a printed page to about four total pages into an introduction to this, right? And transitioned into where the meat of the thing is. And all of that just sort of flowed out. And then I knew I had to transition into from this explanation into something tangible for people,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to transition into talking about how people can go through this exercise called the five whys. And because that's something I learned going through Lean Six Sigma. It is not perfect by any means,
sure.
but it is something helpful to me.
Yeah.
And so I felt like here, you know, that is something that is simple to explain. And anyone can do it at any time. Like, you could walk away from this chapter, do this thing on anything. And things turned from good to crap. I could feel it as I was writing. And it was like you're on the road and there's a mudslide. Mm-hmm. Everything's going along fine. And all of a sudden, the car is veering off the side of the road, but you can't stop it.
Sure.
And you're like, I can't. I don't even know what to do now, but I'm still moving.
Yeah.
And that was it. Usually when I get that feeling, that stops me.
Mm.
And I'm able to go back and say, oh, what did I miss? Where did this go off the road for me? And that will sometimes mean like this whole paragraph has to go. I thought it worked. It didn't work.
Yeah.
But this was a sort of a different experience for me because I had these two warring voices in my head, not literally, but basically one saying you have to do this because you have to bring practical value right now. This is practical value time.
Yeah.
And the other one saying, what good is practical value if it sucks?
Sure. Yeah.
So I have not cracked it yet either, because I still really believe, I suspect the answer is there is something missing in the middle.
Yeah.
Between the two things,
yeah.
that if, you know, the part that didn't feel good to me needs to be the ending of something. Because I think it was trying to, like I can't get out of it. I don't know if that makes sense to you. There's no, it has to end there because there's no way to transition back. And it's just that middle bit,
yeah,
that is really missing to make it feel right.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you're onto something for what might be missing. I was going to ask, like, if you felt like maybe you weren't done explaining yet, where almost like, I don't know if there was like a clock ticking or you saw enough words or you had already written enough that whatever, something happened where that trigger in your brain said, okay, it's time to get to practical now, or mm-hmm. tactical, or, you know, whatever. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you weren't done yet with, well,
right.
And I think that it seems like that's the conclusion you've come to, is like, maybe you were beyond explaining, but there was some transition or something that didn't happen that made the rest of it feel like crap, which it's probably not, but because of flow or,
right.
Whatever. It's feeling that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's that. It could be that. It could be just that I don't know what comes after it.
Yeah.
Or it could be just the fact that that's not my favorite kind of thing to write.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it does become, there's a certain kind of thing that you have to write that has so many boundaries around it,
mm-hmm.
that that something in me makes it feel like it's inherently bad writing.
Yeah.
So you're just regurgitating a thing.
Yeah.
Because it has to be what it is. And to me, I want to be the most creative and the most interesting and whatever things, right?
Yeah.
So anything that is just rote repetition doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah. Got it. Well, we're not going to tell our audience what you're writing right now.
Right.
And they're never going to know what at least initially went from good to crap. And at the end, we'll have transformed from good to good because you'll add that missing piece.
Yeah. Because there's also a chance, as you said, that it's not crap.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's just stopped being fun. I can be really childish about things like that. Well, I hate it. I don't want to do it.
That pit bull.
That pit bull. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, an interesting challenge to overcome, something that we both probably will experience as we continue this process. And I'm willing to bet that it won't be the last time you experience it.
Yeah. Probably.
But we'll get through it. And, you know, again, maybe just another benefit for a couple of first time authors. Ugh. Weird to say that
gross.
Word.
Gross.
Maybe another benefit of having us do this thing together.
Mm-hmm.
So I can verify if it's crap or not.
Yeah.
not like I'm the end all be all or anything on that, but maybe to hear from someone else like, actually, I'm not really connecting the dots here and we need to rework that. Or maybe hearing me say, actually, I think that's pretty damn good. We just got to, I don't know, add some space around it or add that transition piece or whatever.
Yeah. And just important note for you. I am not open to you being to you saying it's crap.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know.
Oh, thanks.
You can there's a different way, and I won't say that to you either. Just so it's okay if I say it's crap.
Yeah.
What I write.
Okay.
But it's not okay if anyone else says it's crap.
Oh gosh. Okay. Right. Noted.
Yeah.
You can call myself crap.
Can I?
Yeah.
I won't.
Sure. I know.
I won't. But you're gonna know when I think it's crap. Yeah.
For sure.
Because I have this thing called a face.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right.
Okay. You ready to get, we don't have a lot of time, but we're going to get a little deep.
Yeah.
And this is the discussion that I spoiled, a thing that we got to talking about in this, the last time we discussed this is, it was one of those moments where, something that I believed we both believed came up, even though it's not really something we've ever expressly discussed. Mm-hmm. And we both agreed like that, that it's at least an interesting thing to dive into and get our thoughts out and see what else other people have to say about it. And it is from another part of the book. So, like, I could tell them anything I'm doing, but I have been bopping all over the place, so nobody's going to know where anything lives in the thing anyway.
Yeah.
But I, as I was writing along, I wrote the phrase, probably not a direct quote, that basically said that we believe that success is an infinite thing, that there is not an end really to success.
Yeah.
And that, and in what is actually on the page, that I think that is in the middle somewhere of the very last sentence of what I wrote there. Because it sort of arrested me for a minute after I wrote it. Like I believed it. I believed we both believed it when I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped and looked at it and went, that's something we should talk about before I tell people that this is a thing we are aligned on.
Yeah.
So, and then I presented it to you and you said, you get out of my office.
Get out. And so this idea of success being infinite, you know, and the connection to success or connection between purpose and success, you know, I mean, just in case anyone listening is like, wait, we're talking about success now? What happened to purpose? You know, they are connected. But I think, you know, something that we maybe something that we have talked about more than once over the years is this idea that there doesn't always have to be a winner and a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And being fully aware that sometimes there are.
Right.
Sometimes there's a winner and a loser. Sometimes you're the winner. Sometimes you're the loser.
Yeah.
And but this idea of success being infinite, or creating or striving for infinite success, I think helps prove that point for us, where I don't even think that's something that we're trying to do, is prove a point that there doesn't always have to be a winner or loser. But I do think that this concept of infinite success helps illustrate or tell the story of how, like, we're not done. Not everyone is done ever mm-hmm. on some things. We're just, like, succeeding and then moving on.
Right.
Some succeed more than others, which can feel like someone's winning and the other is losing.
Right.
You know, and when I say someone, it might be two people, it might be two organizations, two countries, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm super inspired about this idea or this concept of infinite success, because I feel like it, like, aligns with me mentally, emotionally, in, like, ways that I, like, live my life and measure mm-hmm. the success of my life, or understand if I'm achieving my purpose or our organization's mm-hmm. purpose. Because I think sometimes you can, especially if you're comparing what you're doing or what your organization is doing to others, it's really easy to tell yourself you're a loser.
Right.
Because you see other people getting more glory or more fame or more money or, you know, whatever the thing is that you're comparing yourself to. When really, like, if you could look at yourself in a vacuum, you could realize, like, actually, you know, I'm doing pretty darn good myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And one thing we talked about was this feeling of making it, you know?
And, right.
You know, you feel like you've made it because you, whatever, got the house, the car, the job, the wife, the kids, you know, those things. But we all know that, like, that's not the end, right? Otherwise, mm-hmm. a lot of people will have made it and be done by the time they're 30. And that's not the case for people. We've all got a lot more to live for and work for beyond that. So it's helping to explain this concept of, like, infinity and, like, constantly chasing the next success, mm-hmm. growing as a person, growing as an organization, maybe sometimes, like, rebuilding yourself.
Right.
You know? So, like, there's, I don't know, I'm totally rambling now. There's so many different avenues we could go to talk about this, but I did do a little bit of research ahead of the recording here, and I found some really cool stuff. Apparently everything that I looked for today, like, Harvard had already done some research on, so that's cool. Or some...
Is it cool? Because that means they beat us.
Right, yeah.
Jerks.
But we'll share an article, and again, I don't know if it'll be in the show notes or sourced in the book, but Harvard Business Review did this really cool... shared this really cool article about just the complexity of success. And mm-hmm. the analogy that they used was a kaleidoscope. So, and they, I don't know if this is, like, an officially coined term, but the four chambers of success that they mentioned were happiness, achievement, significance, and legacy. And I thought it was cool to be able to, like, look at this whole concept of infinite success, or just success in general, in, like, kind of those four chambers or categories, mm-hmm. because I think that can help tell the story or make sense of this concept where, you know, it's all iterative and we always have, like, the next thing to shoot for. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, and this is how people with varying levels of success and varying levels of capital, goods, things, toys, whatever, can all feel successful, even though they're all totally different. You know, people that live in third world countries that have their basic needs met for the first time in their life can feel a ton of happiness. That's mm-hmm. all that they need. They don't need legacy. They don't need to feel significant in their role on the planet. But if they're happy and they're fed and have a roof mm-hmm. over their head, hey man, I've made it.
Right.
You know? But then we know that a certain amount of time in that spot, or I don't know if time is always the measure, then there's something else to do, and then you're looking for that next level mm-hmm. of success, you know. And same thing other way around. We know plenty of people that have a whole lot of money, have this big old legacy, maybe because of their family or whatever, and they have this significant spot in the world, but they're completely unhappy.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it is this, like, super complex thing, and I love the kaleidoscope analogy, because I think color and, mm-hmm. you know, like, even everything constantly changing, you know, as you spin the kaleidoscope, you know, so.
Yeah.
It's a cool way to illustrate this concept, I think.
Yeah. The idea, it's sort of this, it's this dual purpose thing. And I don't know, it probably it all comes together, and it's just in my brain that separating it between this concept that you are not doing one thing, understanding one thing doesn't make you a success. Understanding your purpose, you know, looking at the things that we've organized this into, your purpose as a human being doesn't automatically, you are both, you're Schrodinger's success, because you are both a success and not a success depending where your head is about it.
Right. Yeah.
So if you find your purpose and you say, you know what, I don't need that new car. I don't need a new house. The thing that is my purpose, I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And everything else, don't need it.
Yeah.
Then you can be a success. If you, and same with an organization, if the organization understands and is fulfilling its purpose, now I think it becomes more complicated for people in organizations because we constantly push ourselves to increase and right. increase and right. increase. And that, you know, doing that, and maybe this is something we need to explore further. I think there's a healthy way to do it and there's an unhealthy way to do it, just like anything else, mm-hmm. right? So as an organization, you can have two organizations doing the same thing, increasing the same amount, and one be very, very healthy and one be dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to people outside, they might look absolutely parallel.
Yeah.
But in reality, one is really succeeding mm-hmm. and the other has a gap to fill.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of success. And then to your point, there is that idea that of success being infinite in the way of, you know, us succeeding, for example, us succeeding as a creative marketing agency doesn't take success away from other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially maybe because our whole purpose, the whole reason we're doing this is so that other people succeed.
Right, right.
And yeah. Marketing isn't pie. We don't all get a piece and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Right. So there's, you know, both that personal and organizational feeling of you can consciously and helpfully continue to evolve in what success means to you, and everybody can win. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that's utopia time.
Yeah.
Where everybody realizes I don't have to take from you.
Yeah.
For me to succeed.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this whole...
I just said everything you said and then repeated it. So you're welcome. I told you I was a good salesperson.
Well, this whole thing is super complex, you know, and I think, you know, your imaginary organizations here that look parallel, but one has a gap and everything. You know, we know that there's other factors, you know, beyond purpose and some understanding of success that can help that be real or feel real, mm-hmm. You know, the joy that people are experiencing along the way, compensation, a whole bunch of stuff, right? And it is kind of this like formula that nobody's figured out and mm-hmm. probably ever will, because the world's constantly changing and people are always changing. But when you have an understanding of maybe the ingredients, you know, you can kind of always get to something tasty. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
to
right.
throw another analogy yeah. out there. But yeah. I think diving into infinite success, helping to like dissect that and explain that, that's got to make the book somehow, especially as it's connected to purpose, which is, you know, obviously a mm-hmm. big part of it, and how we'll kind of like, I don't know, drive things home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think it's an important discussion to have, knowing the people that we are, that we never really, we don't want to be the person who says, well, the only way you're going to succeed is if you do it the way that we say that you should be doing it.
Right.
And I think we have both heard that from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, to really set the table for people to say, like, this is the way that we're succeeding.
Right.
This is how it feels to us. Like we've made the impact that we need to make. And some people aren't going to resonate with that.
Yeah.
And don't love it, but it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
We can live with it.
What you just said makes me feel really good about the introduction that you've written, because it touches on that, you know, just this whole idea of like, we don't know the only way. Mm-hmm. We don't know everything, but we know some things and we wanted to share it, and not like take it or leave it,
but
take it, do something with it and make it your own and be you. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it comes from this fundamental feeling that I realize I have that, you know, we want to call people in. We don't want to exclude.
Yeah.
But in order to sleep at night, we have to know there are people that are our people.
Yeah.
And there are people that are never, they aren't, we could set the table and they won't come to it.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
And
that's okay.
Yeah. And we have to have peace with that, that there are people that just aren't, that don't want to be our people.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that they're doing anything inherently wrong. Probably.
Or that we are either.
Right. Probably just like everyone else, they have gaps that they could fill and we have gaps we could fill. And, you know, like we could stop going off on tangents when we're on a podcast, for example. But I think you'll find we won't.
You know the way to do that, Sue.
Yeah.
Is to wrap up.
Oh, yeah, probably. That is one way.
One way to make sure we don't go problem. On a tangent is to
Yeah, to actually talking. End it. Yeah, so let's do that. So thank you all for listening to this little conversation. Hopefully this was informative into what our process is. I mean, we promised to be real about where we were at, and this is, can't get much realer.
Yes, real as it gets, folks. Yeah, for sure.
So thank you for listening. We are excited, as always, to have you with us on this journey. We would love, you know, you're going to see this stuff. We post this stuff on all of our social channels. !CUSO is how you can find us just about anywhere. So if you have thoughts, opinions, positive comments, specifically.
Emphasis on the positive.
Please feel free to share. And you can always learn more about us at our website, !CUSO.com.
Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Thanks, Sue. Everyone, be awesome, and we'll see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of !! Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.